Sports Professor Rick Morrow. Welcome to Beyond the Scoreboard, the serious show that gets inside the trillion-dollar news, business, marketing, endorsement, and deal-making aspects of sport, with a key aspect for you, the fans, and also the New England sports fan as well. Subscribe to our iTunes feed. Look for us on Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom. This is a big week for sports, even bigger than before. The NHL playoffs and NBA playoffs continue to the semis and eyes ahead toward the finals. The Players is over, waiting for the next major to hit. Major League Baseball gets ready for May and June. Kids out of school soon. Attendance, no excuse for lack of it. And the All-Star Game in Miami, see how the Marlins sale impacts that. NFL getting off the draft, focusing on the NFL experience in November in New York. And the NFL clearly never sleeps. Another example, NASCAR off a horrific accident in Kansas, but continuing to move forward, safety first, and it shows. If you want the full list of our 15 topics, log on to CSNNE.com. Look for the same thing in Chicago. You'll get the top 15 items, 15 to 1. Looking at sports, though, very interesting day today. Preparing for the Indy 500, the Indy Grand Prix, open wheel racing. We have none other than AJ Foyt and his son all talking about not only Foyt Racing, but what it's like to be a racing icon, NASCAR, open wheel. He's the best. Looking forward to that interview. But until then, a number of issues to cover. First of all, in hockey, Gary Bettman looks to bring another Winter Classic back to New York. Philadelphia Flyers and the Rangers played at Citizens Bank Park in 2012. The Penguins and the Sabres played the first Winter Classic in 2008. But how about this? The Rangers and Sabres at Citi Field, New Year's Day 2018. Rangers required to play all home games at MSG, so it's a road trip for them. NHL and NBCSN hopes the interstate matchup will deliver strong media numbers, bigger than this year's Blues-Blackhawks. Didn't work at the ratings count, but bottom line is a lot of tradition as far as New York events, and this is one of them. My take is this. Despite the NYC address, this coming Winter Classic faces tough competition as both the CFP semifinals of the Rose and Sugar revert back to their traditional New Year's time slots. There will be competition, clearly, but the Winter Classic, one of those iconic events. Let's look at Boston again. I know Fenway was great, but you can't have too many of these, Boston fans. Other NHL news. How about Seattle getting an NHL team? Well, maybe a NBA or NHL. The quest to bring one or both of them remains alive, despite Seattle Mayor Ed Murray deciding not to run for re-election. The leaders of the two key arena renovation proposals made it clear the decision will have zero impact on proceedings to renovate the facility and bringing it to NHL or NBA standards, bringing a team to Seattle. Both groups met with a city advisory committee and top officials during the last couple of weeks to speak about the matter. And the City of Seattle Office of Economic Development Director Brian Surratt has said he plans to forward a recommendation to Murray's office in June, as expected, and a final decision made late in the month. New mayor coming into office could potentially slow the process, but it might not be as smooth as some had hoped. There'd be renovators remaining hopeful. The two groups that bid certainly want this moving forward. And my take is this. Seattle has long been a prominent sports city. Oklahoma City was said to have stolen their Sonics, making them the Thunder. And the Seattle folks say it's only right that hoops and hockey fans in the city eventually have their teams to cheer alongside the Mariners and the Seahawks. More expansion money, good for Bruins, good for Celtics. We'll just have to see. How about the Canadian teams this year, by the way? The Nashville Predators, however, reaching their first ever Western Conference final, and hockey fever spread across the South. Predators' gear sales significantly increased throughout the team's playoff run, and Bridgestone Arena become a hub for the team's loyal legion of fans. The Predators' success thus far in the playoffs they made them late favorites to capture the Stanley Cup, proving that while college football remains king in the South and NASCAR remains popular, hockey certainly has a foothold. Adding all the craze around the team, fellow Nashville professional sports teams extremely supportive, as have popular country music artists and Nashville icons. And with Stanley Cup victories already notched in Carolina, Dallas, and Tampa Bay, the NHL's long-shot southern expansion has paid off. A Nashville victory would be more barbecue sauce on the southern feast. And oh, by the way, good for the Bruins to expand the footprint and make the NHL more valuable for everybody. Well, there's not just news on the hockey front. There's news on the baseball front as well. Yankees legends flocked to New York to honor Derek Jeter as his number was retired. Unprecedented activity occurring down the coast in the nation's capital, however. According to the Washington Post, the Washington Nationals and right fielder Bryce Harper agreed to about a $22 million, $21.625 exactly, arbitration salary for the 2018 season, avoiding arbitration and making him the highest salary for an arbitration eligible player in Major League history. The deal eliminates the risk of hostility, at least in the short term, and he said, "I think it's huge. We're able to go into the offseason and worry about different things." Comparatively, when it opened in 1961, RFK Stadium only cost $24 million to build. And the take is this: if you had told local officials that 56 years hence, one baseball player would be owning close to the sum of a single season player, people would think ultimately crazy. But that's where baseball salaries are going. And obviously, baseball continues to be at the forefront in Washington, just as Derek Jeter gets his number retired a few hours up the road in New York. How about Cincinnati? Despite the team's surprising early success, the Reds unable to attract fans to home games. Reds have been sitting at near the top of the table in the ever-competitive NL Central for weeks now, but the team still ranks 26th out of MLB 30 clubs in attendance, averaging a little over 20,000 fans per game. And even when the team manages to fill seats at Great American Park, many of those are away fans in town for the day. The attendance decline ranks 19th in the MLB for change in attendance, though the Reds are doing better than last year's steep drop of 22%, about 6,500 fans a game. How about the team facing a few obstacles, being stuck in a rebuilding process involving dropping stars such as Jay Bruce and Todd Frazier? But just like everywhere else, give it time. Star players are the marquee draw in most sports. Winning is also a great recipe for butts in seats. Look for this trend to improve as the weather warms, familiarity grows, and kids get out of school. The only city probably where patience doesn't work, Boston Red Sox. We all know that. Finally in baseball, let's go way west. With the Raiders making their move to Vegas official, the A's now finding a site to build a baseball-specific stadium. The club is primarily focusing on two, Laney College near Lake Merritt and Howard Terminal on the waterfront next to Jack London Square. A distant third location remains the Coliseum site where they currently play. The A's have been surveying local residents on ballpark sites, and one recent poll made it clear that Laney is number one. A's president Dave Cavill made it clear that the Coliseum site's still in play, though the MLB prefers new stadiums to be built close to downtown areas, which may end up giving Howard Terminal an edge. And here's the take. With property valuations at an all-time high in the Bay Area and ever-growing, one thing is certain. Whatever happens to the site now housing the Coliseum and adjacent Oracle Arena, it'll never end up an empty weed and debris-filled parking lot. And those of you in Boston feel comfortable and happy that you've been through all of the political and other issues that deal with stadium renovation or stadium development. Kudos to John Henry and his team for getting that behind all of us so the Red Sox fans can continue to focus on baseball. How about this? How about international for some closing perspective? First of all, the bid for the U.S. and the World Cup doesn't look all that off. In fact, it looks like it's well on the track for success. The 2018 World Cup in Russia and 22 event heading to Qatar, FIFA's current rules, a little known fact, prohibit European or Asian countries from bidding on 2026. South America expected to bid for 2030, which leaves Africa as the only possible challenger. Morocco said to be entering a challenge, but yet to declare anything publicly. And given the restrictions on possible competitors, the North American bid that FIFA's Congress drew up a spec list for, the bid would then be told to meet certain requirements in a certain time frame. The idea would be this: if the specs are met, The bid would be simply awarded to North America then and there. Bid plans call for the U.S. to stage 60 games, while Canada and Mexico would have 10 games each. Ongoing FIFA corruption investigations could also further delay the approval process, especially after the dismissal of top ethics officials in Germany and in Switzerland. And another issue relating to the World Cup in Qatar. Qatar Airways has been named a FIFA's official partner through 2022. Covers 18 in Russia and 22 in Qatar, as you would expect, as well as the FIFA Confederations Cup in 2017 and the Women's Cup in 2019. The brand will also see FIFA Interactive World Cup, the largest online gaming tournament. The airline joins Coca-Cola, Gazprom, Wanda Group, Adidas, Visa, and Hyundai as official FIFA partners. And known for introducing industry firsts, Qatar Airways is the ideal partner for FIFA as they prepare for the first ever World Cup in the Gulf region, the FIFA Secretary General obviously said. But FIFA targeted a $100 million surplus for the end of the four-year cycle, encompassing the 2018 World Cup, and anticipates a $1.07 billion, get this, $1.07 billion profit for the year, after a loss of $391 million in 2016 and a projected $489 million loss in 17. And the take is this. As the IOC spends the week inspecting Paris after a successful L.A. visit, it's likely by the end of September, all the world's mega events will be sewn up through 2028. Sports stability continues, and whether you think Boston lost out on the opportunity to bid or whether it saved money and saved problems, there may not be an opportunity to bid again for a long, long time. The final international event is our focus for our interviews today, by the way. Preparation well underway for the Indy 500, less than a couple weeks away. Indianapolis Motor Speedway partnered with Indianapolis community organizations to help reignite some of the city's favorite initiatives from previous years. Among the new initiatives this year, signature program for May, hashtag 500 Fashion Fridays. And fans who incorporate the 500 into their Friday outfits receive lunch discounts at select local restaurants. And if fans post photos of themselves, they could win prizes. A free admission for kids 15 and under. Spectator mound at the exit of Turn 4. Fans able to drive along the IMS road course for the Indy Grand Prix. And new, an A.J. Foyt Racing entry, important for the interview, driven by Zach Veach, representing the inaugural Indy Women in Tech LPGA tournament in September. The Indy 500, a great platform for IMS to deepen its ties to the community, and for locally based companies like Guggenheim Insurance, title sponsor of the LPGA event, to deepen its ties to the Memorial Day race heritage. And the Foyt Group is all about that development. A really novel sponsorship with Zach Veach and Guggenheim, but most important, A.J. Foyt tells us about the racing business. I got to tell you, he is a legitimate racing icon. I caught up to him at the ticket unveiling for the Women in Tech Championship and the unveiling of the Veach car in Indianapolis last week, and an icon is an understatement. He was born in Houston, first four-time winner of the Indy 500 in 1961, believe it or not, 64, 67, and 90, and 77. The only driver to win the Indy 500 Daytona in 72, the 24-hour Le Mans in 67. He holds 67 IndyCar wins and 7 IndyCar championships as a driver. He was voted driver of the century. That's all you need to know about A.J. Foyt. He's also been at NASCAR, IndyCar, and the like. A great perspective on the entire industry, A.J. Foyt. So we've already heard a little bit of a story from A.J. Foyt, but the first-time winner of the Indy 500, 61, 64, 67, 77, only driver to win Indy 500, Daytona, 24 hours Le Mans, 67 IndyCar wins, 7 IndyCar championships as a driver. When you say you're voted driver of the century, you got to stop there. What else are you going to say?
I'm just glad to be named amongst some of the great, great race drivers. A lot of people, you're the best. No, I'm just glad to be named amongst them. Wow. Because in their days, it'd be like golf. Yeah. Golfers today are some great golfers.
Right.
But then you look at Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus, and Rodriguez and all them. Yeah. What says they could beat them in their days with what they were playing with?
Right.
That's the same way the racing's changed with the cars and technology. Yeah.
So
I'm just glad to be named amongst the greats.
Well, and that's the only way you can probably deal with the argument, because it's one of those things where there is no answer. Nobody has the right answer.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Who will ever know?
Yeah, exactly. But your perspective is very important, because you can talk about the barometer of change. You win your first Daytona 500 in 72 and the 24-hour Le Mans in 67. So 67, that's a lot of years. That's 50 years or more.
Yeah.
60 years when you can see the changes in the business. So what's the biggest change in the industry?
Well, the biggest change I see is safety. I mean, when it comes right down to it, because I've got a lot of burn scars where you hit and the car blew up and all that. That's the biggest thing, the seats that you got. Before, when you run stock car Daytona, you had a seat about like this. Now you're in kind of a capsule. So what I guess I'm saying is that's the biggest change is safety in racing today compared to what it used to be.
Are the drivers, you kind of answered this, but I'm asking anyway, are the drivers better today? Are they stronger today? Are they more mentally tough today? Or was it the good old days?
Well, they're not near as strong as some of the older guys. Not even close. And I'll tell you why. Because the cars are so much easier to drive today, because you got all the ground effects and all that. And like when I had to change jets or something, halfway through a 500-mile race, I had to do it manually. Now we tell them on a computer, go to map one or map two or whatever.
Okay.
The steering wheel costs more today than my racing whole operation used to be when I raced. So what I tell a lot of the young drivers, don't get mad and throw that steering wheel anymore, because you're talking about half.
You're going to pay for it.
$50,000. You're going to pay for it.
You're going to pay for it.
Because I throwed many of them, but then it wasn't about $40.
So they're not stronger. Are they smarter? Are they more strategic? Or was it the good old days?
I don't think they're any smarter. And the reason I say that, because they're driving everything operating off of computers now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like in golf. Look at what Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and all them played with.
Yeah.
And look at your clubs today, what they're playing with. You'll never know if them golfers were as great as these, or were they, you just don't know, because it'll never happen. So you can just look back, them were some great golfers and some of my idols, you know, back there. And just like Ben Hogan, always wore his gloves. And then last time I won Indy, I said 67, he seen my red gloves, and everybody else wore their fireproof ones. And I got scars on my hand. I could not drive with them real thick gloves. And I guess I still got about, he must have sent me 25 or 30 pair, and I still got about two or three brand new pair, because you always wore them out. But I always raced in golf clubs. If you ever look at my hands, I always wore the golf clubs.
Do you
see? So back then, you had to have feel in your hands and also your butt.
Yeah.
Now the computer tells you everything.
Well, I don't want to ask you what you wore on your butt. We'll leave that one alone for another day. But here's a kind of final question for you. Is the industry going in the right direction? Is it better today? The business of NASCAR, of Indy racing, the sport itself, is it better today, or was it better years ago?
Well, I think years ago the crowds were bigger and picking up every day, better and better now. And because like when I started in stock cars and modifieds at home and midget, people followed you. It'd be like some of your amateur golfers. They start real little and as they go bigger, you got a fan base that follows them until they get to the top. And that's what you don't have today with the race drivers. They come in, and a lot of their parents, they got a lot of money, they buy them a ride because they know it's a lot safer. But back then, they didn't want to mess with it because it's very easy to go 6 foot underground.
Yeah. Very easy to go 6 foot underground, but the guy didn't do it, and he is a legitimate icon, and I'm honored to have you do this. Thank you, my friend.
I appreciate it. Thank
really,
you.
Thank
nice
you.
To be with you.
We have another Foyt as well. Larry Foyt, the president of A.J. Foyt Racing, his biological grandson of the and adopted son of A.J. Foyt. Born in Waller, Texas, he drove 04, 05, and 06, the Indianapolis 500 for A.J. Foyt Enterprises. And he also drove in NASCAR. He got the Foyt perspective in both areas as well. And he began to take over the management responsibility for A.J. Foyt Enterprises in 2007. 10 years of management, driving NASCAR, driving IndyCar. Larry Foyt sure can give us some perspective as we head into the Indy 500.
Sports Professor Ricaro, beyond the scoreboard, in the boardroom, an interesting event, to be sure, the merger of golf and sports, but all in the context of business, the Indy Women in Tech Championship held in September at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We're here to unveil a car that Guggenheim is underwriting on behalf of Indy Women in Tech. But more important, we're here to learn a little bit more about the business of racing generally, the business of AJ Foyt Racing, and who better, Larry Foyt, president of AJ Foyt Racing. How are you?
How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for doing this. So, you drove in the 05, 04, 06 Indianapolis 500 for AJ Foyt Enterprises. How scary was it driving for your dad?
Well, I had driven for him for a while, so I was used to it over in the NASCAR series.
Yeah.
So, but my dream was always Indianapolis. This race is what I grew up coming every year of my life and watching Dad race in it leaves quite an impression on a young kid. So even though my career ended up heading toward NASCAR and stock cars, my dream was to get to Indianapolis and drive an Indy car around Indy, so I was just glad I got to do it.
Well, we'll certainly talk to your dad about the perspective of racing then and racing now. But give me your perspective on it as a NASCAR driver, on an Indy driver. You know, comment generally about both businesses. Have they gone at the same speed? Are they different? Are they similar to where they were when you were, you know, actively participating?
Absolutely. Well, and business is actually the reason I ended up going to NASCAR, because back then there was the split in the IndyCar leagues, which everyone talks about, the split, and which we're still recovering from, but it feels like right now IndyCar has huge momentum. The split seems like long ago, and everyone's back together, and IndyCar's growing again and has a great feel around it. Business-wise, I mean, to have sponsors like Guggenheim come on board and be tied with this LPGA event is just great for IndyCar.
So let's go back to that for a minute. Now, you've been running AJ Foyt to Enterprises for a decade. Mm-hmm. And when you were involved in learning the business or knowing the business, this you call it a split and it's over, but it was a massive schism. I mean, it was Hatfield-McCoys. So at the time, who were the rallying forces basically that caused it to come back together, and how was life in the division different than life as it is today?
Sure. Well, what you hate to see are the fans divided, because you had some fans that were loyal to one side and some fans that were loyal to the other. But for us on the business side, the good thing was, as I came back over and started to get involved in the business side, and you kind of say how that happened, in my second Indy 500, I actually broke my back in a pretty big crash. So I started wanting to get more involved on the business side as I was stepping out of the car. And the biggest thing with us is here you have AJ Foyt, you have a legend who won everything. One in many decades, front engine cars, rear engine cars. And at the same time, I felt like our team hadn't really taken that step into the modern era, and we were still a little bit set in some old school ways. So that was my thing. I said, Dad, if I come into this, you have to let me modernize. We have to start charging ahead. And that's what's been great, and it takes great partners to do that. We got aligned with ABC Supply. Now they've been our sponsor the last 12 years, which is unbelievable. In fact, now they are the longest full-time running sponsor in IndyCar, which is great. And that's what's let us grow. Back then, we were one car. We're up to two, and now three at Indianapolis with the Iowa Championship car. So it's exciting.
So the idea of asking the namesake, the icon, to kind of leave you alone and let you run the business. I'm sure he said, "Yeah, I'll do it," but did he really?
Of course not. And no, and I wouldn't ask him that, because especially when he's always my biggest bank of information. You know, he's still, it's amazing how up to date he is with everything every day. I rarely make big decisions without talking to him. Of course, I mean, he's still the boss. And his experience and knowledge, you can't put a number on that. It's unbelievable.
Is there a tension ever between preserving the old and modernizing? And it's always something business schools warn about. But how do you preserve the legacy and move on and be relevant?
Well, I think we pay a lot of tribute to all his success, and that's one way I think we keep. It's amazing even how at his age, the fans, even at Indianapolis, still love him. I mean, when he walks out through Gasoline Alley, the fans just go nuts and really appreciate all of his accomplishments. And I think the thing is, too, he can do it all, which is pretty rare. I mean, he was a mechanic, an engineer, a driver, so he really knows every part of that race car, and people respect that.
The brand, the building of the brand, and maybe more important, the sustaining of the brand. And the textbooks all talk about the Arnold Palmers and the Jack Nicklauses and the younger LeBron James and the Michael Jordans. You know, AJ Foyt's in that category too. How do you look ahead to the longevity of the brand, and how do you make sure you sustain it?
Well, we want to win. I mean, that's number one for us, is getting back in victory lane. And it's been since 2013 since we won a race, and it's been since 1999 since we won the Indy 500. So we know we have our work cut out for us, and that's by growing and modernizing. We feel like we're getting more competitive every year, and that's what we want to do. Is the Foyt brand is built on winning, and that's what we want to do.
I'm sure there will be another Foyt perspective on this, but do you like the way the business is going?
I do. Like I said, we want more wins, and you know, AJ reminds us of that every day, because that's what he wants to do, is win. But we've got great partners, and that's letting us grow the team to where we need to be.
A little nervous about fans, you know, NASCAR. I mean, you have to ask that question of the France family, and you see the attendance, television attendance. How do you deal with the challenges of sustaining excellence?
Well, I think we obviously live in a much different world than we did in past generations, where maybe the automobile was the most important thing in your life and was a huge part of your young adult life, where now technology has advanced so far to where you know, telephones and data and all the information we have as young kids are kind of leading the way. So I think that really trends towards our cars. Our cars are fast and sleek, and they're really supercomputers running around the racetrack gathering data all the time. So I think it'll really appeal to young fans.
So speaking of young driver like Zach Veach, I mean, you look at that car, and plus he's 4'8", 38 pounds. How does he, he bulks up every day and he gets in that car, and he's an athlete. You must be proud to see a kid like that in that car.
Well, he is. I've seen some photos and video of him doing his rock climbing, where he gains a lot of his strength, and it's really impressive. So a lot of these young drivers, what's great is we've got little guys like Zach who are strong, but then also bigger guys who get it done as well. So it's really all over the board, and I think we have a really good driver in Zach.
Well, Larry Foyt, I really appreciate your perspective, but we need to go from the perspective of one of the youngest guys, he's looked like he's 12, Zach Veach, to an icon.
Well, that's our show for the day, ladies and gentlemen. Subscribe to our iTunes feed. Look for us on Stitcher, Google Play, and Audio Boom. And if you want the 15 to watch, log in on CSNNE.com. And Chicago folks, you do the same. Like to thank Tanner Simpkins and Jason Levine for putting the show together. We'd like to thank Larry Foyt and AJ Foyt for giving us a sense of history and perspective as we head into the Indy 500. And we thank you all for listening and watching. And join us once again next week when we go beyond the scoreboard.